That's what all the best DJs did back in the day, Conor. You'd know there was an a cappella bit, you'd do your outro and then you'd leave it run.
And you know what, when I was sitting at home trying to record the songs off the radio, you people would ruin it for me.
So sorry, yeah. Conor Pope is here, pricewatch@rte.ie. And this is a really interesting one. Before we get to it, you're writing today about the cost of living crisis and how we compare to other European countries, and we don't compare favourably.
Well, what has happened in the Irish Times of late is people have been contacting us, you know, to say, you know, they've been comparing prices here to prices in other parts of the world. And so the page today, I kind of figured, well, the page is called Price Watch, so let's devote it to watching prices both at home and abroad. And there's some really interesting contributions from readers of the Irish Times. And one person goes through it and offers a really detailed analysis of how pricing might work and, you know, why some of the prices that were charged in Ireland just don't really stack up. And then people were submitting contributions about how much they paid for products in France and Portugal and Spain. And a lot of the stuff makes for interesting reading and it gets people really angry. But I do always think it's worth putting it into context. And I know that there's this narrative that Ireland is a really expensive country. And, you know, we're always talking about rip-off republic. Mm. And certainly products and things are more expensive here. And when you think of, you know, the price of a glass of wine, $13.50 or whatever it might be, it's kind of scandalous. Because, you know, the bottle of wine probably doesn't cost $13.50. So why are we paying six times the price of that it cost the restaurant or whatever it might be? But then there are other circumstances when, you know, the experiences of our readers are valid, but they're not comparing like for like. So you talk about the people comparing the price of a coffee and a shot of brandy and a pastel de nata or a custard tart in Portugal paying less than a fiver. And like, you wouldn't get the coffee for the fiver in a lot of places in Ireland, never mind the brandy and the custard tart. But the reality is that the cost of living in Portugal is way less than the cost of living in Ireland.
And the price of labour is less.
The minimum wage is like significantly less.
But here's the thing that struck me, that the minimum wage hasn't increased over the last while.
Yeah.
And that a lot of businesses in Ireland, percentage, they'd use a percentage cut. So they put 50% on whatever they pay for something.
Yeah.
Which suggests to me that they are making an awful lot more money than they did a year ago because of the cost of living crisis.
But you know what, it's really hard for us to know, and it's something that I've said in the Irish Times on multiple occasions in articles over recent weeks, that we just don't know how much money big retailers are making, because there's no transparency in this sector. So we don't know how much the likes of Dunn Stores or Lidl or Tesco are making in this country. So you might look at the price of a product and say, well, hang on a second. I mean, you know, I can see why the cost to the manufacturer has gone up, because they've got to buy in wheat and they've got to buy in all of this stuff. But I can't see why. So their prices, their costs might have gone up by 50%, but I don't see why your margin would have gone up by 50% or whatever it might be, because your costs haven't gone up by that much. I mean, you're paying more for energy, you're paying more for staffing, probably, but not
that much
50%
more.
Yes. So, I mean, like, there are questions that the retailers have to answer. And the interesting thing about supermarket pricing has been it's come into sharp focus in recent days. There was a retail forum meeting last Wednesday that didn't really achieve a great deal. The Minister for Enterprise, Simon Coveney, has said that there's options he's considering. So we have to see what's going to happen in that space.
I would hate to think that my local supermarket is pulling the wool over my eyes. I would hate to think that they are making more profit at my expense.
Well, I think the reality is, and I think it's not a new phenomenon, I think a lot of retailers in Ireland have been making more money in this jurisdiction than they've been making in other jurisdictions.
Yes, because Ireland used to be known as Treasure Island.
Treasure Island. And that's nothing to do with the cost of living crisis. And that's nothing new. It's been happening for many, many years. And I think until we have that transparency and until we can say, OK, we know that Tesco in the UK is making X profit margin and Tesco in the Republic of Ireland is making X profit margin and Dunn's is making this amount of money and Lidl is making that, then we would have the
and
facts.
Why don't we know that?
Well, that's the big question that has yet to be fully answered.
And has anybody been hauled in front of a Dáil committee to answer the questions on energy prices yet?
There was the CRU were in front of the Dáil last Wednesday, funnily enough, and they were talking about energy prices. And I actually kind of felt for the CRU, because
the CRU is the
Commission for the Regulation of Utilities. And they made the point that it's not their job to be the apologists for pricing in the energy sector. It's not their job to come out and defend Electric Ireland.
What is their job?
Their job is to oversee the sector and to regulate the sector.
Yes.
So the question that was put to them at the hearing, and it was an interesting question, was, well, we keep hearing about hedging,
yeah,
and we keep hearing that the suppliers, Bord Gáis Energy, Electric Ireland Energy, Airtricity and the others, we keep hearing that they were hedging. So does the CRU have oversight of exactly how the hedging policies of all of these different companies work?
And
the answer was interesting. They said no. So they don't know how the hedging policies work.
That's
so
me slapping my head.
Again, yeah, it's one of these things we kind of have to take it as an article of faith or on trust. And I think a lot of people are, they don't really trust
suppliers.
No, we're running out of patience. We'll have to wait and see what happens.
Right. Okay. Now, this came into Price Watch. We booked a 1 week half board holiday from May 20th in Zell am See, in Austria with TUI in April. At a cost of €2,506.10. Yesterday afternoon, I got an email to say that the hotel was unfortunately not available and that they were cancelling the holiday. I checked the hotel online and there is full availability for our selected dates. In the email, they say that in 10 days' time, the booking will be cancelled and that we will get our money back in 14 days after that. When I went to manage my booking on their website, it hasn't been updated. The only option is to cancel and lose most of the money. We are very worried that we may never get our money. We would like to book another holiday, but obviously need a refund before doing that. So the 20th of May is Sunday week, is it?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So actually, I got two emails about this story back to back from two completely different readers or listeners. And I think so that kind of piqued my interest. I would have probably been interested in it anyway. But so like I was like, what's going on? Why did TUI cancel these holidays? So, you know, just out of the blue. And it's absolutely like for one of the things that we've been talking about a lot on this show and elsewhere has been the benefit of booking with tour operators, because when you book with a tour operator, you're supposed to have a degree of confidence and trust as opposed to when you book independently. And when you book independently, you're kind of more at the mercy of the airlines or you're more at the mercy of the accommodation providers or whoever it might be. Whereas the idea is you book with a tour operator and you have that degree of certainty. Mm. And I've said that multiple times. And here is an occasion where that certainty has been completely taken away, not just from this person, but from somebody else who contacted me. And it's, I think,
and the other person with TUI as well.
They were also booked with TUI. Sorry, okay. I should have made that clear. Yeah. So, and like, so people book their holidays and they book their dates. A lot of the time they'll take time off. So they'll book the time off at work, or they'll make childcare arrangements, or they'll do all sorts of things to facilitate the holiday. And then they start to anticipate and look forward to the holiday. So with 10 or 12 or 15 days notice, to suddenly get an email going, sorry, lads, your holiday's been cancelled. An issue with the hotel. We'll sort out your refund in, you know, 3 weeks or whatever it might be. It's simply not acceptable. So I contacted TUI and I asked them, you know, what's the story here? How come? And I sent them the details of the two people's problems. So I got a statement, and the statement basically said TUI will begin on the 27th of May and not on the 20th of May, as these customers had originally booked. As soon as we became aware, we contacted the customers impacted and offered them to amend their holiday, including to the following week, and with a 10% rebooking incentive, or to cancel with a full refund for to cover the disappointment this has caused. And they said it only affected two people. So 100% of the people who were affected contacted me, which I think is kind of remarkable. So I didn't think that response was sufficient, because it didn't answer the question, like, why would you take bookings for the 20th of May if you weren't starting your holidays till the 27th of May? That makes no sense to me. So I pushed back and I said, how is it possible that you'd accepted the holidays for this date if you weren't offering the holidays for that date? And did TUI accept that it completely messed up these people's plans? And I also questioned whether or not a 10% discount was an adequate response. So I then got a further response which said TUI was fully aware of the situation and is doing everything they can to ensure that the two bookings affected by this cancellation will be well looked after with future bookings, or if preferable, fully refunded. Now, they'll be
still not good.
You've no choice but to fully refund them, because
yes,
you've cancelled their
yes,
holiday.
Yeah, yes.
So it's not like TUI were doing
but
people a favour.
There should be compensation.
Well, this is
here.
What I would have thought, yes, and I think maybe listeners can have their own judgment on that.
Yes.
So then they said one booking has already been resolved, which is actually the booking from our listener, and then another one is in the process of being resolved, they said. And I pushed back again, and I said, like, why did you cancel? Why did you take bookings for the holiday if you weren't going to offer the holiday? And then the third statement, which came in literally just as I was walking into studio, pretty much was the cancellations were caused due to operational changes. TUI holidays in Austria will now commence on May 27th. Again, this affected two bookings and one is already resolved. So they had multiple occasions to do the right thing here. And I think the right thing would have been to offer more than a 10% discount on a future booking. And I think they had multiple chances to explain why they were taking bookings for a holiday on May the 20th if they weren't going to offer that holiday until May the 27th. So they didn't answer that question. And this idea that the phrase operational changes some way sheds a lot of light on what's gone on here is absolutely bonkers. Because operational changes, I'm sorry lads at TUI, is absolutely meaningless. It doesn't tell us what happened. It doesn't tell us why they took the bookings and then why they cancelled the bookings 10 days out. Now, as I say, people make plans, they look forward to these things, and they put their trust in an operator like TUI who has badly let them down in this instance.
So our listener is sorted.
Well, they'll get their refund. Yes, okay, but yes, like, yeah. Getting the refund is the bare minimum that is legally required of this company.
Yeah. Okay. Pricewatch@rte.ie. Conor, thanks so much, and we'll talk to you next Monday. That's it from us. Sarah and Cormac are on the way on Drive Time. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Monday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.